arms around my stomach. "I'm great," I say, far too brightly.
"Tell her about the pills," Ollie says.
"What pills?" Carla demands, looking only at me.
"We got pills, experimental ones."
"I know your mama didn't give you anything experimental."
"I got them on my own. Mom doesn't know."
She nods, validated.
"From where?"
I tell her the same thing I told Ollie, but she doesn't believe me. Not for a second. She covers her mouth with her hand and her eyes are cartoon big. I put my heart into my eyes and plead with her, silently. "Please, Carla, please understand. Please don't expose me. You said life is a gift."
She looks away and rubs small circles into a spot above her bosom.
"You must be hungry. I'll make you some breakfast."
She directs us to sit on a bright yellow, overstuffed couch before disappearing into the kitchen.
"This is exactly the way I pictured her house," I say to Ollie as soon as she's gone. I don't want him asking any questions about the pills.
Neither of us sits. I move a step or two away from him. The walls are painted in primary colors. Knick-knacks and photos cover almost every surface.
"She seems okay with the pills," Ollie says finally.
He moves closer, but I tense up. I'm afraid he'll be able to feel the lies on my skin. I wander around the living room, looking at photos of generations of women who all look like Carla. An enormous one of her holding Rosa when she was a baby hangs over a love seat. Something about the photo reminds me of my mom. It's the way she's looking at Rosa with not only love, but a kind of fierceness, too, like she would do anything to protect her. I'll never be able to repay her for all she's done for me.
Carla makes us a breakfast of chilaquiles, corn tortillas with salsa and cheese and crema mexicana, which is something like creme fraiche. It is delicious and new, but I only have a single bite. I'm too nervous for food.
"So, Carla, in your professional opinion, do you really think the pills are working?" Ollie asks.
His voice is overflowing with optimism.
"Maybe," she says, but shakes her head as she says it. "I don't want to give you false hope."
"Tell me," I say. I need to ask her why I'm not sick yet, but I can't. I'm trapped by my lies.
"It could be the pills are delaying your sickness. Even without any pills, it could be you just haven't met any of your triggers yet."
"Or it could be that the pills are working," Ollie says.
He's moved beyond hope. As far as he's concerned, these pills are a miracle.
Carla pats Ollie's hand from across the table.
"You're a good egg," she tells him. She avoids looking at me and takes our plates and goes to the kitchen.
I follow behind her, shame making me slow.
"Thank you."
She dries her hands on a towel.
"I understand you. I understand why you're out here."
"I might die, Carla."
She wets a dishcloth and wipes down an already clean spot on the counter.
"I left Mexico in the middle of the night with nothing. I didn't think I was going to survive. A lot of people don't make it, but I left anyway. I left my father and my mother and my sister and my brother."
She rinses the cloth, continues.
"They tried to stop me. They said it wasn't worth my life, but I said that it was my life, and it was up to me to decide what it was worth. I said I was going to go, and either I was going to die, or I was going to get a better life."
Now she rinses the cloth again and wrings it tight.
"I tell you, when I left my house that night,
I never felt more free. Even now, in all the time that I've been here, I never felt as free as that night.
And you don't regret it?
Of course I regret it. A lot of bad things happened on that trip. And when my mother and father died, I couldn't go back for the funerals. Rosa doesn't know anything about where she's from. She sighs.
You're not living if you're not regretting.
What am I going to regret? My mind cycles through visions. My mom alone in my white room, wondering where everyone she's ever loved went. My mom alone in a green field, staring down at my grave, and my dad's grave, and my brother's grave. My mom dying, all alone in that house.
Carla touches my arm, and I force all the images ruthlessly from my head. I cannot bear to think about these things. If I do, I won't be able to live.
Maybe I won't get sick, I whisper.
That's right, she says. And hope spreads through me like a virus.
TTYL. Ollie sends Kara a text. Back in 2 days. Be good. First-time flyer FAQ. Question. What is the best way to relieve earaches caused by changes in cabin pressure? Answer. Chewing gum. Also, kissing. Question. Which is the best seat? Window, center, or aisle? Answer. Window. Definitely. The world is quite a sight from 32,000 feet above it. Note that a window means your traveling companion may then be stuck next to a spectacularly loquacious boar. Kissing your companion, not the boar, is also effective in this situation. Question. How many times per hour is cabin air refreshed? Answer. 20. Question. How many people can an airline blanket comfortably cover? Answer. 2. Be sure to raise the seat arm between you and snuggle as close as possible for maximum coverage. Question. How is it possible that humans invented something as amazing as an airplane and something as awful as a nuclear bomb? Answer. Human beings are mysterious and paradoxical. Question. Will I encounter turbulence? Answer. Yes. Into all lives, a little turbulence must fall. The carousel.
I've decided baggage carousels are a perfect metaphor for life, Ollie says, from atop the edge of a non-moving one. Neither of us has any checked luggage. All I'm carrying is a small backpack with essentials, toothbrush, clean underwear, Lonely Earth Maui guidebook, and The Little Prince. Of course, I had to take it with me. I'm going to read it one more time to see how the meanings changed.
When did you decide this? I ask.
Just now.
He's in a crackpot theory mood, just waiting for me to ask him to elaborate.
Want to give it some more thought before you regale me? I ask.
He shakes his head and jumps down right in front of me.
I'd like to begin the regaling now, please.
I gesture magnanimously for him to continue.
You're born. You get thrown onto this crazy contraption called life that just goes around and around.
People are the luggage in this theory?
Yes.
Go on.
Sometimes you fall off prematurely. Sometimes you get so damaged by other pieces of luggage falling on your head that you don't really function anymore. Sometimes you get lost or forgotten and go around forever and ever.
What about the ones that get picked up?
They go on to lead unextraordinary lives in a closet somewhere.
I open and close my mouth a few times, unsure where to begin. He takes this as agreement.
See? It's flawless.
His eyes are laughing at me. Flawless, I say, meaning him and not the theory. I thread my fingers through his and look around. Does it look like you remember? Ollie's been here once before, on a family vacation when he was 10.
I don't really remember much. I remember my dad saying it wouldn't kill them to spend a little money on first impressions.
The terminal is dotted with greeters, Hawaiian women in long, flower-patterned dresses, holding welcome signs and strands of purple and white orchid leis draped over their forearms. The air does not smell like the ocean. It smells industrial, like jet fuel and cleaning products. It's a smell I could come to love because it would mean that I was traveling. All around us, the noise level rises and falls, punctuated by choruses of alohas sung out by greeters and families alike. As first impressions go, this one isn't bad. I wonder how his dad has managed to live in the world all his life without knowing what was precious in it. In your baggage theory, your mom is one of the bags that gets damaged? He nods. And your sister? She's one of the ones that gets lost, goes around and around forever. He nods again. And you?
Same as my sister.
And your dad?
He's the carousel.
I shake my head. No, I say, and grab his hand. He doesn't get to have everything, Ollie. I've embarrassed him. He tugs his hand out of mine, moves a small distance away, studies the terminal.
You, my dear, need a lei, he says.
He nods at a greeter who hasn't yet found her party. I don't, I say.
Oh, but you do, he insists. Wait here.
He makes his way over to her. At first, she shakes her head no, but Ollie persists, as he's wont to do. A few seconds later, they're both looking over at me. I wave to prove to her that I'm nice and friendly, the sort of person you might want to give a free lay to. She relents. Ollie comes back triumphant. I reach out to take it, but he places it over my head instead. You know, leis were traditionally given only to royalty, I say, quoting from my guidebook. He gathers my hair into his hands and caresses the back of my neck before letting the lei fall into place.
Who doesn't know that, princess?
I finger the strand, feeling as if the lei has transferred some of its beauty to me. Mahalo nui loa, I say. It means thank you very much.
You read every single word in that guidebook, didn't you?
I nod my head. If I had a suitcase, I say, I would love it. I would shrink wrap it when I traveled. I would put stickers from every place I'd ever been on it. And when I saw it on the carousel, I would grab it with both hands, and I'd be so happy to have it, because then my adventures could really begin. He looks at me, a non-believer confronted with, if not evidence, then at least the possibility of God. He pulls me into his arms, and we're wrapped around each other, his face buried in my hair and my face pressed into his chest. No daylight between our bodies.
Don't die, he says.
I won't, I say back. Madeline's Dictionary. Promise, noun, plural, promises. 1. The lie you want to keep. 2015, Whittier.
Here now. According to the guidebook, Maui is shaped like a head. Our cab ride will take us across the neck, along the jawline, over the chin, mouth, nose, and up to the wide forehead. I've booked us into a hotel in Ka'anapali, which is in the skull, just beyond the hairline, geographically speaking. We turn a corner and suddenly the ocean is just there, running alongside the road to the left of us. It can't be more than 30 feet away. The vast endlessness of it is shocking. It falls off the end of the world. I can't believe I've missed all this, I say. I've missed the whole wide world.
Ollie shakes his head. One thing at a time, Maddie. We're here now.
I look back at Ollie's ocean eyes and I'm drowning, surrounded on all sides by water. There's so much to see that it's hard to know what to pay attention to. The world is too big and there's not enough time for me to see it.
Again, he reads my mind. Do you want to stop and look?
Yes, please.
He asks the driver if it's okay for us to pull over, and he says it's no problem at all. He knows a good place coming up, a park and picnic area. I'm out of the car before the engine's off. The water is just a short walk downhill and then across the sand. Ollie trails the distance behind me.
The ocean.
It's bluer, bigger, more turbulent than I'd imagined. Wind lifts my hair, scrubs sand and salt against my skin, invades my nose. I wait until I'm down the hill to take off my shoes. I roll my jeans up as far as they'll go. The sand is hot and dry and loose. It waterfalls over my feet and slips through my toes. As I get closer to the water, the sand changes. Now it sticks to my feet, coating them like a second skin. At the water's edge, it changes again and becomes a liquid velvet. My feet leave impressions in this softer mix. Finally, my feet are in the surging water, and then my ankles are, and then my calves. I don't stop moving until the water is up to my knees and soaks my jeans.
Be careful, Ollie calls out from somewhere behind me.
I'm not sure what that means in this context. Be careful because I may drown? Be careful because I may get sick? Be careful because once you become a part of the world, it becomes a part of you, too? Because there's no denying it now. I'm in the world. And, too, the world is in me.
Madeline's Dictionary. Ocean. Noun. Plural. Oceans. 1. The endless part of yourself you never knew but always suspected was there. 2015. Whittier. Reward if found. Our hotel sits right on the beach, and we can see and smell the ocean from the small open-air lobby. We're greeted with alohas and more leis. Ollie gives his to me so that I now have 3 layered around my neck. A bellhop in a bright yellow and white Hawaiian shirt offers to retrieve our non-existent luggage. Ollie makes a noise about our baggage coming later and steers us around him before he can question us further. I nudge Ollie toward the check-in counter and give him our paperwork.
Welcome to Maui, Mr. and Mrs. Whittier, says the woman at the desk. He doesn't correct her mistake, just pulls me closer and gives me a loud smack on the lips.
Mahalo very much, he says, grinning wildly.
You'll be joining us for 2 nights. Ollie looks to me for confirmation, and I nod. A few keystrokes later, the woman tells us that, though it's still early, our room is already ready. She gives us a key and property map and tells us about the complimentary continental breakfast buffet. Enjoy your honeymoon, she winks and sends us on our way. The room is small, very small, and decorated much like the lobby, with teak furniture and large pictures of bright tropical flowers. Our balcony, called a lanai, overlooks a small garden and a parking lot. From the center of the room, I turn a 360 to see what's considered necessary in a temporary home. Television, a small fridge, an enormous closet, a desk and chair. I turn another 360, trying to figure out what's missing. Ollie, where are our beds? Where do we sleep? He looks momentarily confused until he spots something.
Oh, you mean this?
He walks over to what I thought was an enormous closet, grips the two handles near the top, and pulls to reveal a bed.
Voila, he says, the very model of modern-day space-saving efficiency. The height of style and comfort, of convenience and practicality. I give you the Murphy bed.
Who is Murphy? I ask, still surprised that a bed came out of the wall.
The inventor of this bed, he says, winking.
With the bed unfolded, the room feels even smaller. We both stare at it for longer than is strictly necessary. Ollie turns to look at me. I'm blushing even before he says,
just the one bed.
His voice is neutral, but his eyes aren't. The look in his eyes makes me blush harder. So, we say simultaneously. We laugh awkward, self-conscious laughs, and then laugh at ourselves for being so very awkward and self-conscious.
Where is that guidebook? He asks,
finally breaking eye contact and making a show of looking around the room. He grabs my backpack and digs around, but pulls out the little prints instead of the guide.
I see you brought the essentials, he teases, waving it in the air.
He climbs onto the bed and begins lightly bouncing in the middle of it. Murphy's springs protest noisily.
Isn't this your favorite book of all time?
He turns the book over in his hands.
We read this sophomore year. I'm pretty sure I didn't understand it.
You should try again. The meaning changes every time you read it. He looks down at me.
And how many times have you...
A few.
More or less than 20.
Okay, more than a few. He grins and flips open the front cover.
Property of Madeline Whittier.
He turns to the title page and continues reading.
Reward, if found. A visit with me, Madeline, to a used bookstore. Snorkel with me, Madeline, off Mauna Kea to spot the Hawaiian state fish.
He stops reading aloud, continues silently instead.
When did you write this? He asks.
I start to climb onto the bed, but stop when the room sways a little. I try again, and another wave of vertigo unbalances me. I turn and sit, facing away from him. My heart squeezes so painfully in my chest that it takes my breath away. Ollie's immediately at my side.
Mad, what is it? What's wrong?
Oh, no. Not yet. I'm not ready. I'm lightheaded, I say. And my stomach.
Do we need to go to a hospital?
My stomach growls loud and long in reply. I look up at him. I think I'm hungry, we say simultaneously. Hunger. That's what I'm feeling. I'm not getting sick. I'm just hungry. I'm starving, I say. In the last 24 hours, I've had a single bite of chilaquiles and a handful of Nurse Evil's apple slices. Ollie starts laughing. He collapses backward onto the bed.
I've been so worried that something in the air was going to kill you.
He presses the heels of his hands to his eyes.
Instead, you're going to starve to death.
I've never actually been this hungry before. For the most part, I've always eaten my 3 meals and 2 snacks exactly on time every day. Carla was a big believer in food.
Empty tummy, empty head, she'd say.
I lie back and laugh along with him. My heart squeezes again, but I ignore it. Remembrance of things present. I feel much better after we grab a quick bite to eat. We need beach gear and, according to Ollie, souvenirs. So we stop in a store called, helpfully, Maui Souvenir Shop and General Store. I don't think I've ever seen so much stuff. I find myself overwhelmed with the sheer volume of it. Stacks and stacks of t-shirts and hats that say Maui or Aloha or some variation of that. Racks of hanging flower-patterned dresses in almost every color. Carousel after carousel of tchotchkes, keychains, shot glasses, magnets. One carousel is dedicated solely to surfboard keychains with stenciled names, alphabetically arranged. I search for Oliver or Madeline or Ollie or Maddie, but don't find any. Ollie comes up behind me and wraps a single arm around my waist. I'm standing in front of a wall of calendars featuring shirtless surfers. They're not unattractive. I'm jealous, he murmurs into my ear, and I laugh and rub my hands over his forearm. You should be. I reach for one of the calendars.
You're not really.
For Carla, I say.
Sure, sure.
What did you get? I lean my head back against his chest.
Seashell necklace for my mom, pineapple ashtray for Kara.
Why do people buy all this stuff? He holds me a little tighter.
It's not so mysterious, he says. It's so we remember to remember.
I turn in his arms, thinking how quickly it's become my favorite place in the world. Familiar, foreign, comforting, and thrilling all at once. I'm going to get this for Carla, I say, brandishing the calendar, and chocolate-covered macadamia nuts, and one of those dresses for myself.
What about your mom?
What kind of memento do you get for the mother who has loved you your whole life, who has given up the world for you, who you may never see again? Nothing will ever do. Not really. I think back to the old photograph she showed me of all of us in Hawaii. I have no memory of it. No memory of being on that beach with her and my dad and my brother, but she does. She has memories of me, of a life that I don't have at all. I pull away from Ollie and wander around the store. By 18 years old, other teenagers have separated from their parents. They leave home, have separate lives, make separate memories. But not me. My mom and I have shared the same closed space and breathed the same filtered air for so long that it's strange being here without her. It's strange making memories that don't include her. What will she do if I don't make it home? Will she gather her memories of me close? Will she take them out and examine them and live them over and over again? I want to give her something of this time, of my time without her, something to remember me by. I find a carousel with vintage postcards, and I tell her the truth. Oh, how I wish you were here. Mom. 304 Papillon Way, Los Angeles, California, 90036. The swimsuit. It's possible that I should have tried on the swimsuit before I bought it. It's not that it doesn't fit, it's that it does. And very closely. Am I really expected to appear in public with so little clothing on? I'm in the bathroom looking between my actual body and my body in the mirror. The suit is a bright pink one-piece with spaghetti straps. The pink is so bright that it gives color to my cheeks. I look flushed, like a rosy-cheeked summer girl who belongs in the sun. Humidity has made my hair bigger than normal. I gather it up and plait it into a long braid to subdue it. I look back to the mirror. The only way to subdue this suit is to wear more, possibly all my clothing at once. I scan my body again. There's really no denying that I have breasts and legs in this thing. All my parts seem to be in the right proportion and in the right place. I twist a little to confirm that my derriere is covered, and it is, but only just. What would I see in the mirror if I were a normal girl? Would I think that I was too fat or too thin? Would I dislike my hips, my waist, my face? Would I have body image issues? As it stands, my only issue is that I would gladly trade this body for one that works properly. Ollie knocks on the door.
Are you snorkeling in there?
I do eventually have to leave this bathroom, but I'm too nervous. Will Ollie think all my parts are in the right place? Deep sea fishing, actually. My voice shakes only slightly.
Fantastic. We'll have sushi for...
I pull the door open quickly, like ripping off a band-aid. Ollie just stops talking. His eyes travel slowly from my face to my toes, and even more slowly back up again.
You're in a swimsuit, he says.
His eyes are on the expanse of skin between my neck and chest. I am. I look up into his eyes, and what I see there makes me feel like I'm not wearing any clothing at all. My heart picks up the pace, and I take a deep breath to try to slow it down, but it doesn't work. He runs his hands along the length of my arms, slowly pulling me toward him at the same time. He touches his forehead to mine when we're finally close enough. His eyes are blue fire. He looks like a starving man, like he could devour me all at once.
That swimsuit, he begins.
Is small, I conclude. Guide to Hawaiian Reef Fish. Humu humu nuku nuku apu a'a. Rectangular triggerfish. Nohu, lionfish. Aha, needlefish. Zebra moray eel. Maddie, endangered, nearly extinct. Ollie, immortal, nearly perfect. Jump. I surprise Ollie by getting into the water right away. He says I'm like a baby who runs headlong into things, not knowing enough to be afraid. Like a baby, I stick my tongue out at him and make my way, life jacket and all, farther into the water. We're at Black Rock, so named because of the rocky cliff formed by the lava rocks that run right up to the beach and jut high into the sky. In the water, the rocks form a crescent shape that calms the waves and forms a coral reef, perfect for snorkeling. Our guide at the Fun in the Sun desk says the beach is popular with cliff divers, too.
The water is cold and salty and delicious, and I think maybe I was a mermaid in a former life.
An astronaut mermaid architect. The flippers and life jacket keep me floating on the surface, and it only takes a few minutes for me to get used to breathing through the mask. Listening to the magnified sound of my own breath is peaceful and strangely euphoric. I'm being reassured with every breath that I'm more than just alive. I'm living.
We see the Humuhumu Nukunukuapua'a right away.
Actually, we see quite a lot of them. I guess the reason they're the Hawaiian state fish is that they're plentiful. Most of the fish are clustered around the coral reef. I have never seen colors so intense. Not just blue and yellow and red, but the deepest blues and brightest yellows and most vibrant reds you've ever seen.
Away from the coral, the sun's rays form rectangular columns of light in the water. Schools of silver fish dart in and out, acting with one mind. Holding hands, we swim farther out and see gliding stingrays that look like giant white-bellied birds. We see two enormous sea turtles that seem to be flying instead of swimming. Intellectually, I know that they won't hurt us, but they're so big and so obviously belong to this water world where I do not, that I stop moving, not wanting to attract their attention. I could stay all day, but Ollie eventually tugs me back to shore. He doesn't want us, meaning me, to get burned by the midday sun. Back on the beach, we dry off under a shady tree. I feel Ollie's eyes on me when he thinks I'm not noticing, but we are a mutual admiration society. I'm secretly ogling him, too. He's taken off his shirt and is only wearing swim trunks, so I can finally see the lean, smooth muscles of his shoulders and chest and stomach. I want to memorize the landscape of him with my hands. I shiver and wrap my towel around my body. Ollie misinterprets my shiver and steps close to me to add his towel to my shoulders. His skin smells like the ocean and something else. Some indefinable thing that makes him Ollie. I shock myself by wanting to touch my tongue to his chest, to taste the sun and salt on his skin. I drag my eyes away from his chest and up to his face. He avoids my eyes and wraps the towel tight around me so none of my skin is showing, and then steps away from me. I get the feeling that he's holding himself in check. I'm sure I don't want him to. He looks over to the cliff, where people, mostly teenagers, are leaping into the ocean.
"Want to jump from a big rock?" he asks, eyes sparkling.
"I can't swim," I remind him.
"A little drowning never hurt anybody," says the boy who once warned me that the sea was merciless and unforgiving.
He grabs my hand, and we run toward the cliff together. Up close, the rocks look like hard black sponge. They're sharp against my feet, and it takes me a while to find footholds for each step, but eventually we make it to the top. Ollie's eager to jump. He doesn't even stop to admire the view.
"Together?" he asks, looking down at the sparkling water.
"Next time," I say.
He nods. "I'll go first. I won't let you drown."
He jumps up and out and does a full somersault before arrowing into the water. A few seconds later, he resurfaces and waves up to me. I wave back and then close my eyes to take stock of my situation. Because jumping off a cliff seems like a pivotal moment where a little stock-taking should be done. Strangely, though, I find I don't really want to think too much. Like Ollie, I just want to jump. I search out Ollie's face in the water and find him waiting for me.
Considering what the future may hold, jumping off this cliff doesn't seem so scary at all.
Cliff Diving, a Guide. Lonely Earth Maui, beyond Ka'anapali. Off the Beaten Path, Cliff Diving. Here's what happens when you jump feet first and arms flailing off of a 30-foot cliff into the Pacific Ocean. The fall is so thrilling that you have to scream on the way down. The slap of the water against your feet stings momentarily, and then cold, salty water shoots straight up your nose. It's dark beneath the surface because your eyes are closed, quiet except for the rush of water filling the temporary vacuum formed by your body, cold except for the warm pocket of air that the sea makes for you. It takes longer to get back to the surface than you think it will, and there's a moment of feeling as if you're on another planet or nowhere at all. You surface, and water drains from your nose and eyes, and you're just another small creature in the big, wide world. Zach. Back at the hotel, Ollie calls his friend Zach from our room phone. Half an hour later, he's at our door. Zach has dark umber skin and enormous dreadlocks and a smile that's almost too big for his face. He immediately begins playing air guitar and singing a song that I don't know. Ollie grins from ear to ear. Zach thrashes his head dramatically while he plays, and his hair keeps time with the music. "Zach!" Ollie says, and pulls him into a hug. They slap each other's backs loudly. "It's Zachariah now." "Since when?" asks Ollie. "Since I decided to become a rock god. It's Zachariah, like Messiah," I pipe in, getting his joke. "Exactly. Your girlfriend is smarter than you are." I blush and look over to see Ollie blushing too. "Well, that was cute," Zach says, laughing and strumming air guitar strings. His laugh reminds me of Carla's. Unselfconscious, a little too loud, and full of mirth. In that moment, I miss her desperately. Ollie turns to me. "Maddie, this is Zach." "Zachariah." "Dude, I'm not calling you that. Zach, this is Maddie." Zach takes my hand and gives it a quick kiss. "Fantastic to meet you, Maddie. I've heard a lot about you, but I didn't think you were really real." "That's okay," I say, examining my hand where he kissed it. "Some days I'm not." He laughs too loudly again, and I find myself laughing with him.
"Wonderful," Ollie cuts in. "Let's move this along. There's a loco moco with Maddie's name on it."
A loco moco is a mountain of rice topped with a hamburger patty, topped with gravy, topped with two fried eggs. Zach's taken us to a mixed plate restaurant for a late lunch. We sit at a table outside, the ocean just a few hundred feet in the distance.
"This place is the best," Zach says. "It's where all the locals eat." "You tell your parents yet?" Ollie asks him in between bites. "About the rock star thing or the gay thing?"
"Both."
"Nope." "You'll feel better once it's out there."
"No doubt, but the difficulty level is a little high."
Zach looks over to me. "My parents only believe in three things. Family, education, and hard work. By family, I mean one man, one woman, two children, and a dog. By education, I mean a 4-year college. And by hard work, I mean nothing involving art, or hopes, or rock star dreams."
He looks back to Ollie now, and his brown eyes are more serious than before.
"How am I going to tell them that their firstborn son wants to be the African-American Freddie Mercury?"
"They must suspect," I say. "The rock star part, at least.
Your hair is 4 different shades of red.
They think it's a phase.
Maybe you could write them a song. His laugh booms.
I like you, he says.
I like you too, I say back. You could call the song, This Apple Has Fallen Very, Very, Very Far From the Tree.
I'm not even sure I'm an apple, Zach says, laughing. You guys are funny,
Ollie says, almost smiling, but obviously preoccupied.
Dude, let me borrow your phone, he says to Zach.
Zach hands it over, and Ollie immediately starts typing.
What's going on with you? Dad's still a bastard? You thought that would change?
He doesn't look up from the phone.
I guess not, says Zach, a shrug in his voice.
How much does he know about Ollie's family? His dad is so much worse than just a bastard.
What about you, Madeline? What's wrong with your parents?
It's just me and my mom.
Still, there must be something wrong with her.
My mom. I've barely given her any thought. She must be crippled with worry. Well, I think there's something wrong with everyone, don't you? But my mom's smart, and she's strong, and she always puts me first. I know I've surprised them, because neither one speaks. Ollie looks up from Zach's phone.
You have to tell her you're okay, Matt.
He hands me the phone and leaves for the restroom. From Madeline F. Whittier to genericuser033 at gmail.com. Subject. No subject. Do you have my daughter? Is she okay? From Madeline F. Whittier to genericuser033 at gmail.com. Subject. No subject. I know she's with you. You don't understand how sick she is. Bring her home. From Madeline F. Whittier to genericuser033 at gmail.com. Subject. No subject. Please tell me where you are. She could get severely ill at any minute. From Madeline F. Whittier to genericuser033 at gmail.com. Subject. No subject. I know where you are, and I'm on the next flight. I'll be there first thing in the morning. Please keep her safe. I stop reading, cradle the phone against my chest, and close my eyes. I'm guilty and resentful and panicked all at once. Seeing all her worry and pain makes me want to go to her and reassure her that I'm okay. That part of me wants to let her keep me safe. But another part of me, the newer part, isn't ready to give up the world I'm starting to know. I resent that she's logged into my private emails. I resent that now Ollie and I will have even less time than I thought. My eyes are closed for too long, because Zach finally asks if I'm okay. I open my eyes and take a sip of pineapple juice, nodding around the straw.
No, really? Are you feeling okay? Ollie told me.
He told you I'm sick.
Yeah.
I'm fine, I say, realizing that I really do mean it. I feel fine. I feel more than fine. I look back down at the phone. I need to say something. From genericuser033 to Madeline F. Whittier. Madeline.Whittier at gmail.com. Subject, no subject. Please don't worry, Mom. And please don't come here. I'm really okay, and it's my life, too. I love you. I'll see you soon. I hit send and hand the phone back to Zach. He pockets it and stares at me.
So you really bought pills off the internet?
He asks. I'm still so shaken up from my mom's emails and worrying that Ollie and I don't have enough time for each other that I'm not prepared to hear my lie coming out of his mouth. I do exactly what you're not supposed to do when lying to someone. I don't meet his eyes. I fidget and blush. I open my mouth to explain, but no explanation comes. He's already guessed the truth by the time I finally meet his eyes. Are you going to tell him? I ask.
No. I've been lying about myself for so long, I know what it's like.
Relief washes over me. Thank you, I say. He just nods. What would happen if you told your parents? I ask. His answer is immediate.
They'd try to make me choose, and I wouldn't choose them. This way, everybody wins.
He leans back in his chair and strums.
All apologies to the Rolling Stones, but my first album's going to be called Between Rock and Roll and a Hard Place. What do you think?
I laugh. That's terrible. He grows serious again.
Maybe growing up means disappointing the people we love.
It's not a question, and anyway, I don't have an answer. I turn my head and watch Ollie as he walks back toward us.
Doing okay?
He asks, before kissing my forehead, and then my nose, and then my lips. I decide not to bring up my mom's impending visit. We'll just make the most of the time we have. I've never felt better in my life, I say. I'm grateful at least that I don't have to lie about this. The Murphy Bed. It's late afternoon by the time we get back to the hotel. Ollie flicks on all the lights and the ceiling fan, and then does a diving somersault onto the bed. He lies on one side, and then the other.
This side is mine, he says, meaning the left side, closer to the door. I sleep on the left, he says, so you know, for future reference.
He sits up and presses down on the mattress with his palms.
You know what I said before about Murphy beds being the height of comfort? I'm going to take that back.
Are you nervous? I blurt out. I turn on the lamp on the right side of the bed.
No,
he says too quickly. He rolls over, drops off the side of the bed to the floor, and stays there. I sit down at the edge of my side and bounce an experimental bounce. The mattress squeaks at me. Why do you sleep on the left when you sleep alone? I ask. I move on to the bed and lie down. He's right. It's breathtakingly uncomfortable.
Maybe it's anticipation, he says.
Of what? He doesn't answer, so I roll over to peer down at him. He's lying on his back, one arm flung across his eyes.
Company, he says.
I retract my head, blushing. You're kind of a hopeless romantic, I say.
Sure, sure.
We slip into quiet. Above us, the fan whirs softly, coaxing warm air around the room. Through the doors, I hear the ding of the elevators and the low murmur of passing voices. A few days ago, just a single day outside seemed like it would be enough. But now that I've had one, I want more. I'm not sure if forever would do.
Yes, Ollie says after a while. I'm nervous.
Why? He takes a breath that I don't hear him release.
I've never felt about anybody the way I feel about you.
He doesn't say it quietly. If anything, he says it too loudly and all in a rush, as if the words have been wanting to tumble out for a long time. I sit up on my elbows, lie back down, sit up again. Are we talking about love?
I've never felt this way either, I whisper.
But it's different for you.
There's frustration in his voice.
Why? How?
It's your first time for everything, Maddie, but it's not for me.
I don't understand. Just because it's the first time doesn't make it less real, does it? Even the universe has a beginning.
He's silent. The more I think about what he's saying, the more upset I get. But then I realize that he's not trying to dismiss or belittle my feelings. He's just scared, given my lack of choices. What if I've just chosen him by default?
He takes a breath.
In my head, I know I've been in love before, but it doesn't feel like it. Being in love with you is better than the first time. It feels like the first time and the last time and the only time all at once.
Ollie, I say, I promise you that I know my own heart. It's one of the few things that's not completely new to me.
He climbs back into bed and throws an arm out. I curl into him, put my head into the Maddie-shaped nook of space between his neck and shoulder.
I love you, Maddie.
I love you, Ollie. I loved you before I knew you.
We drift off to sleep, curled around each other, neither of us talking, just letting the world make some noise for us for a while, because all the other words don't matter right now. All the words. I come awake slowly, languidly, until I realize what we've done. I glance at the clock. We've been asleep for over an hour. We barely have any time left, and we've spent some of it sleeping. I glance at the clock again. 10 minutes to shower and another 10 to find the perfect spot on the beach to watch our first and last day together come to an end. I shake Ollie awake and rush to get dressed. In the bathroom, I slip into my one-size-fits-all dress. One size can fit all because the skirt flares out and the top is ribbed elastic that can stretch to accommodate most anyone. Forgoing my scrunchie, I let my hair have its way, and it falls curly and full around my shoulders and down my back. In the mirror, my skin glows a warm brown, and my eyes glitter. I am the picture of health. Ollie's seated on the top rung of the railing on the lanai. His position looks precarious, even though he's holding on to the railing with both hands. I remind myself he has plenty of control over his body. He smiles, more than smiles when he sees me. He's Ollie and not Ollie again, eyes sharp and tracking my approach. I'm aware of every single sparking nerve in my body. How does he do that with just a look? Do I have the same effect on him? I stop at the sliding glass doors and look him over. He's wearing a close-fitting black t-shirt, black shorts, and black sandals. The angel of death on vacation.
Come here, he says,
and I nestle into the V of his legs. He goes still, and his grip on the rail tightens. I inhale the fresh scent of him and look up. His eyes are a clear, summer blue lake that I can't see the bottom of. I touch my lips to his. He hops down from the railing, pushing me back against a table. Before I know it, I'm flush against him, and he's kissing me with a groan. I open for him, and we kiss until I can't breathe, until my next breath is one of his. My hands are on his shoulders, on the back of his neck, in his hair. My hands don't know where to stop. I am electrified. I want everything, and all at once. He breaks our kiss and we stand there, drawing ragged breaths, foreheads and noses touching, his hands gripping too hard on my hips,
my hands flat against his chest.
Maddie.
His eyes are a question, and I say yes, because it was